everybody. I'm Tracy Tucker, and welcome to the Who Is In My Genes podcast, where we share adventures in exploring family trees, including tips for researching your own family tree, stories about discoveries, DNA testing and matches, and lots about adoptee searches and advocacy, because we believe everyone has a right to know who is in their genes. We are here today to talk about the last two of your eight great-grandparents. We've gone over the first six already. Now that you've had a little time to process what you've learned so far, how are you feeling about everything?
I'm feeling that I have a better picture of where I came from and what our family is about. And I like that because it gives me a better appreciation for how the sequence of events and everything that happened led us to here.
And does it make you any more interested in history in general?
I would specify it, and it would probably be selfish, of the history specifically surrounding my family members.
Right.
For other generic people, that's one thing, but digging more potentially into these specific people, I could be intrigued at that, definitely.
Because when I was in school, history was, of course, like one of the most boring subjects. But when I started doing genealogy and realized how important it is to understand how country borders change and why people moved and immigrated and all the things that happened, I wish I had paid more attention and I wish I knew all of history now.
I don't think you get an appreciation for it until you're older, and then you realize what it actually means.
Yes, when you're old enough to start looking backwards more than you look forwards, is that what you mean?
Well, for people of all ages.
Okay, so now for your two final biological great-grandparents. My biological mother's parents, Roy Edward Nutt and Georgia Jeanette Underwood. Roy Edward Nutt was born on January 10th, 1918 in Lawrence County, Tennessee, to John Robert Nutt and Harriet Bell Pogue, who were also born in Tennessee, and their parents were also born in Tennessee.
Wow.
So several generations in Tennessee there. And he had seven older siblings, Clarence, Robert, Edith, Pauline, Hazel, and Havana. In 1920, they lived in Lawrence County, Tennessee on, surprise, a farm. And Father John did general farming. All their neighbors were farmers as well. If you look at the census, I don't know if you can see it here, but it all says farmer, 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 farmer. Mm-hmm. Maybe one teacher on there and all the rest are farmers. And they did own their house on the farm. Sometime between 1935 and 1940, Roy moved to Atlanta, Georgia with his sister Edith and her husband Paul. The 1940 census, which shows them living together in Atlanta with Edith and Paul's two children, says that they were in Lawrence County, Tennessee as of April 1st, 1935. So they moved sometime after that. Edith's husband, Paul, was born in Georgia, so maybe that's why they moved to Atlanta. Roy was 22 and was working as a truck driver in a lumber yard. On October 16th, 1940, Roy registered for the World War II draft in Atlanta, age 22. His description is given as 5 foot 9 inches, 154 pounds, brown hair, blue eyes, and a ruddy complexion. And on his card there, you can see his signature. October 25th of that year, so just a few days later, he married Georgia Jeanette Underwood in Rockdale County, Georgia. And we have a copy of their marriage license and certificate here. Georgia was born on October 8th, 1918, in Tallapoosa, Georgia, to James Jackson Underwood and Virginia Ann Hatfield. Yes, Hatfield. In 1920, she lived with her parents and six siblings, John, Katie, Luther, Gaynell, Avis, and Oscar, and Father James, who went by Jim, was a carpenter in the house building industry. In 1930, Georgia was living with her mother, Virginia, and brother Oscar, and they were all living with Georgia's older sister, Katie, and Katie's husband and children in Atlanta. Father James, who went by Jack, is not there. Now, if you're listening to this episode and some of this is ringing a bell, that's because we traced Virginia Ann Hatfield, Georgia's mother, in the episode, I Knew You Were a Hatfield. In 1940, Georgia's living with her mother, Virginia, in a rented house in Atlanta, and daughter Katie, who they were living with in 1930, is now divorced and living with them along with Katie's two children. So Roy and Georgia met in Atlanta sometime between when they moved there in 1935 and when they got married in 1940. And then in 1942, they have a daughter and then a son in 1943. Roy enlisted in the army on January 21st, 1944, at age 25. He did spend some time in Europe during World War II. He was discharged on January 28th, 1946, about 2 years later, and then they moved to Akron, Ohio. In 1950, the last publicly available census in Akron, Roy is working in a lumber yard. Georgia did not work. And I want to send out a huge retroactive thank you to the 1950 Akron census enumerator, Edith Frisch, because she wrote everything in block capital letters. Hallelujah. So easy to read. You hardly ever see that. Roy eventually began working at Firestone Tire and Rubber Company in Akron, where he worked for 33 years before retiring. Georgia worked for many years with Akron Public Schools in the cafeteria. They attended Grace Baptist Church and enjoyed watching Cleveland Indians baseball games. They moved to Doylestown, Ohio, sometime in the 1990s. Roy died at age 81 on January 3rd, 2000, just a few weeks before you were born, in Barberton, Ohio, and is buried at the North Lawn Memorial Gardens in Ohio. Georgia died at age 87 on April 21st, 2006, and she is buried with Roy at North Lawn. So, what do you think of these two great grandparents? I know we don't have a ton on them here, and part of that is because they were not immigrants, and their parents were not immigrants, and their grandparents were not immigrants. So they come from a long line of families from the South, Tennessee and Georgia. So what do you, any thoughts on these guys?
Well, you would think, just with basic reasoning, that if someone was in your country, you would document them more and routinely than someone who initially came to your country. So it's very surprising to me that there's less info on the people that went to US places, shopped at US grocery stores, whatever it may be. Which I don't know what it says, but it does. I think it does make some sort of statement about who we're interested in when we have people like these two who are in America and specifically the same part of America for generations, and that less is known about them than somebody that may have came from another country for one generation.
Well, I think part of it is because when someone immigrates, there are records of that travel, for one thing, right? So they had to come over on a ship or something. And then if they applied to be a US citizen, they had to fill out paperwork for that. And also, because 1950 is the last census that we have, the younger you are,
The less
the
information.
less there information there is, at least from the census data. Because, they would be on the 1960 census and the 1970 and the 1980 and the 1990, but those aren't publicly available yet. So we don't know what's on there for them during those times. It's not going to be like if your grandchildren are, if you have children and grandchildren one day looking back at you, they can go online and find out where you ate your lunch today. that wasn't available back then. So unless they were submitting things to the newspaper, like we've seen with others about, parties that they had or traveling that they did, if they didn't ever apply for a passport or do international travel, there's just probably less published out there.
There's about 30 to 40 years of no information on them.
Now that you've met all eight great grandparents, I want to give you a little summary of what we've learned. Of your eight great grandparents, four were immigrants: Camille, Alma, Sam, and Christine. All became U.S. citizens. Two were first-generation Americans born of immigrants, Peter and Cecile. Their occupations were: Camille had a farm, and Alma did not have an official job, but we know that if they lived on a farm, she was working all day long, because that's how farms are. Peter worked in real estate, and Cecil did not have an official job during most of their marriage, but assisted in Peter's real estate office after the children were grown. Sam was a laborer and worked at Goodyear Aerospace later in his life. Christine did not work that we know of. Roy was also a laborer and worked at BF Goodrich later in his life. And as a reminder, one of Sam's sons also worked at BF Goodrich. All four of your great grandfathers registered for a draft: Camille and Peter for World War I, and Sam and Roy for World War II. Two served in the military. Peter served in the Navy during World War I, and Roy served in the Army during World War II. But also a reminder that three of Sam's sons served in the Navy during World War II. Four were Catholic: Camille, Alma, Peter, and Cecil. Two were Baptist: Roy and Georgia. Two were Orthodox Christian: Sam and Christine. Four are buried in Michigan: Camille, Alma, Peter, and Cecile. Cecil, I keep saying Cecile. I don't know which one it is because Cecil seems to me like a man's name. I know Cecil is a man's name and it's spelled Cecile with an E at the end, but I know from your grandmother that it was pronounced Cecil.
She could have been saying it wrong.
Well, it was her mother, so I would assume she knew.
Maybe her mother was wrong.
It could be. So, you guys, if you're listening, when I say Cecil and Cecile, that's the same person. And then four are buried in Ohio: Sam, Christine, Roy, and Georgia. So, what do you think of all that?
I think even through these four episodes, the final summation is that this is the definitional American story from all angles of it. The immigration side, the homegrown multi-generation in the South side, the fact that they are all in the war, the fact that they are all with in very fitting jobs at the time, laborers or salesmen or farmers or working in the school system. The melting pot of religions and sort of the Midwestern adolescence of most of them. It's very, very American-esque, if that's a word. It is,
Doesn't it make you feel more American?
it's extremely fitting to the stereotypical American story, to a T.
To a T. And finally, now that you've learned a little more about all those eight great grandparents, I want to show you again your ancestry origins chart, meaning where ancestry says your DNA is from, at least over the past few hundred years. And compare this to where your eight great grandparents were from. So, do you see anything in here that you think you can identify yourself at this point?
Yes, definitely. I knew going back to a previous episode of my Belgian ancestry, but fitting that in with all these other countries and that sort of white Europe, Eastern, Western Europe, mix that was very typical of many of the immigrants that came over to America during these time periods. So it's interesting that it's both very generic in that way, but also that each of these people had their own individual story, which is something I think that most people forget when they look at things like this or ancestry or your DNA or wherever, is that in mass it can be very plain from a flyover view. But then you get to learn, okay, this person had this happen and this person had this happen, and that they lived their own entire life.
So this is not definitive, but I took a stab at trying to look at your ancestral regions on Ancestry and kind of bust them up into your four sets of great grandparents. Now, it's not definitive because DNA gets mixed and remixed as it gets passed down. But some of it seems pretty likely, but just take it with a grain of salt. So you have 20% Germanic Europe, and it specifically calls out Belgium, which you just mentioned. So Germanic Europe is mostly Belgium, and that's Camille and Alma. They would have contributed roughly 25% of your DNA, 12.5% from each one of them. So that's close. You also have 2% Denmark, 2% the Netherlands. So that's only 4%. And you have Peter and Cecile, who were from the Netherlands. So they either had ancestors who came from somewhere else, or that's just mixed in with England and Northwestern Europe, or Central and Eastern Europe, because Central and Eastern Europe also has some of those countries in there. So that's kind of mixed up. Now, you also have 16% the Balkans, and Greece and Albania 2%. And then 7% Central and Eastern Europe, which just so happens to total 25%. So I'm thinking that's Sam and Christine from Macedonia. But Central and Eastern Europe also includes parts of the Netherlands, Belgium, and Denmark. You also have Southern Italy and Eastern Mediterranean, which can also include the Greek islands, Turkey, Greece, and North Macedonia. But your Macedonian great grandparents, Sam and Christine, are on my side, and I don't have any Southern Italy and Eastern Mediterranean in my mix. But it could have skipped me. Finally, your England and Northwestern Europe, 43%, is, oh, and also Scotland, 6%, is a big chunk of yours. And so that's probably almost all of Roy and Georgia, because many of the earliest settlers in that area came from Western Europe. Like I said, it's not definitive, but I think we probably have some of them pretty darn close there. So, how does it feel to see where all of your ancestry actually comes from? And do you feel like a European mutt like I do?
I do, because some I've heard, and I know some people say, oh, I'm 65% this. Their family grew up in a certain country and they lived there all their lives, and their grandparents had their grandparents lived there. So theirs is very easy and simple to follow. But this is European mutt. It just
For
is.
sure,
There's
right.
no way to parse this. There's no way to say, oh, I'm mainly this or I'm mainly that. It's a bunch of people from a bunch of countries with ancestors from even more assorted countries all mixing together.
I mean, really, the only parts of Europe that are not covered by your DNA are like Spain and Portugal. I mean, almost all the rest of the countries are covered in some portion or another by where your DNA is coming from.
It just shows that all the different places they came through or came from.
Well, and don't forget that DNA is not border specific. Like, if you cross a border into another
Your
country, like,
DNA
their
doesn't
DNA is
change.
not automatically different. You know, there was country borders are completely man-made. You know, those are not, those don't exist in nature. So nature doesn't change something just based on an arbitrary line that we've drawn down, you know, the middle of the forest or wherever it is. So, and those borders change frequently anyways. So, and people moved and they didn't, you know, always necessarily say, well, I'm only going to procreate with people who are of the same ancestry as me or from the same country as me. So a lot of mixing going on there. And I think it's pretty neat to be able to at least somewhat connect your lines back to where they came from, even it is if it isn't necessarily their DNA ancestry. It's still where they were born and where they grew up. It's still like their culture and what they consider to be their family.
It's fascinating to see all the mixing over all that time and how it coalesces into one big tree.
And just a reminder, if you are listening to this in summer of 2025, we are still running our summer sale. Get 10% off any research service in our store at whoisinmygenes.com, including DNA match analysis, family trees, family tree audits, family tree posters, or family history projects. Use code SUMMER to get 10% off if you check out in our store, or email me at Tracy, Traci, at whoisinmygenes.com. Thank you for listening to the Who Is In My Genes podcast with me, Tracy Tucker. If you enjoyed it, please give us a great review to help others find the show and follow us to get notified of new episodes. Visit us online at whoisinmygenes.com for all the ways we can help you find out who is in your genes, and follow us on Instagram for the images we mention in the show. Links are in the show notes. Join us next week for a new episode of Adventures in Exploring Family Trees.